Chapter 35. Construction on San Quentin Prison began auspiciously on Bastille Day, July 14, 1852. Why it was later named after a notorious inmate serving time for murder whose name was Miguel Quentin is anybody's guess. The term San is Spanish for male saint. Quentin was no saint, but his name stuck, and the prison became known as San Quentin. The oldest state prison in California, it held its first execution in 1893 by hanging José Gabriel for murdering an aged couple he worked for. Women were also confined there in a separate building. By 1906, over 100 prisoners had died behind the prison walls, from inmate murders to suicides to death from natural causes. They were buried in the cemetery outside the prison walls. Richard Weber, the warden, was a big man, agile as a gymnast and energetic, a workaholic who was dedicated to his job. Heavy set, but solid as a rock, he wore a perpetual grin that ever so slightly curled the corners of his lips. A strict disciplinarian with a strong approach to reform, he put the prisoners to work making products, working the gardens, and joining a number of educational studies. His program of compensating the inmates in a small way, along with rewarding them with reductions in their sentences, enhanced his reputation as the tough but fair warden. Bronson was close to the mark in claiming Weber could not be bribed. He was known as a man far above the taint of corruption or graft. A devout Catholic, Weber and his wife had raised a family of 8 children. His salary as chief of the state's largest prison facility was ample, but left little for extra niceties. His dream of retiring someday to a ranch in the San Joaquin Valley was only that, a dream. Though it was often said that every man has his price, all who knew Warden Weber thought of him as untouchable. But as it turned out, beneath that hard veneer of integrity, he was only human. Soon after Cromwell was locked up in solitary confinement, Weber visited the bandit banker in his small cell 2 levels below the main prison building. After ordering the guard to unlock the steel door, Weber entered the cell and sat down on a small folding chair he had brought with him. "Mr. Cromwell," he said politely, "welcome to San Quentin." Cromwell rose from his bunk and nodded. "Perhaps I should say I'm grateful for your hospitality, but that would be a lie. It's my understanding that you'll only be with us for a short time." "Until I'm arraigned in federal court," said Cromwell. "Is that what Bronson of the Van Dorn Detective Agency told you?" Weber nodded. "He said he was waiting for instructions from the Criminal Investigation Department in Washington." "You know why I was arrested?" "I was told you were the notorious Butcher Bandit." "Are you familiar with my status in the community?" asked Cromwell.
"I am," replied Weber. "You own the Cromwell Bank and are an admired philanthropist."
"Do you think such a man could rob banks and kill dozens of people?" Weber shifted on his seat. "I must admit I find the idea a bit far-fetched." Cromwell circled for the kill. "If I gave you my word that I did not commit any crimes, and these are false charges by the United States government to take over my bank, would you release me?" Weber thought a moment, then shook his head.
"I'm sorry, Mr. Cromwell. I am not authorized to release you."
"Even though formal charges have not been filed?"
"I have been assured that charges are being filed as we speak."
"If I guarantee that I do not intend to escape, but need go directly to my attorneys in the city and obtain the necessary release papers from a court magistrate, then would you allow me to leave the prison?"
"I might, if I could," said Weber.
"But, as warden, I cannot permit you leaving the prison grounds before the release papers are in my hands. Besides,
There are Van Dorn agents patrolling outside the prison walls to prevent you from escaping. Cromwell looked around the concrete windowless cell with its steel door. Has any inmate ever escaped from solitary? Not in the history of San Quentin. Cromwell paused to lay his trap. Suppose, just suppose, Warden, that you personally took me into San Francisco. Weber looked at him with interest. What do you have in mind? Deliver me to County Prosecutor Horvath's office, and $50,000 in cash will be delivered to your house on the prison grounds by private messenger precisely 1 hour later. Weber pondered Cromwell's offer for several moments. He knew it was not an idle offer. The banker was worth many millions of dollars, and the offer was in cash, which would leave no trail should law enforcement investigators come sniffing around. $50,000 was an enormous sum. He could keep the money hidden until his retirement. Weber also did his arithmetic and knew that it was more than enough to buy him a ranch second to none in the state. It was an offer even an honest man of integrity could not refuse. Finally, Weber rose from his chair, stepped to the steel door, and rapped three times. The door opened, and the uniformed guard entered. Put a hood over the prisoner's face and take him to the office behind my house. I'll be waiting there. Then he turned and left the cell. 10 minutes later, the guard pushed Cromwell into Weber's office. Remove his hood and manacles, Weber instructed. As soon as the hood was off and the manacles around Cromwell's feet and hands removed, the guard was dismissed. I trust I can rely on your word as a gentleman that my compensation will arrive an hour after I safely deposit you on the steps of the city hall. Cromwell nodded solemnly. You can rest assured. The money will be in your hands this afternoon. Good enough. Weber rose and walked to a closet. He returned with a woman's dress, hat, purse, and shawl. Put these on. You are a small man and about the same size as my wife. You will be disguised as her when we drive through the inner gates and the main gate. Keep your head down and the guards will take no notice. She and I often take drives around the countryside or into town. What about Van Dorn's agents who are patrolling the outer walls? Weber smiled thinly. I am the last man they would suspect of foul play. Cromwell looked at the clothes and laughed. Something funny? Asked Weber. No, replied Cromwell. It's just that I've been here before. When Cromwell had slipped on the warden's wife's clothes, he wrapped the shawl around his neck and pulled the hat down so it would cover the beard that was beginning to stubble his chin. Ready as I'll ever be, he announced. Weber led him out of the office across a yard to the garage that housed the warden's Ford Model T automobile. Weber effortlessly cranked over the engine and climbed behind the wheel. The car began rolling over the gravel road toward the inner gates and was passed through with a wave from the warden. The main gate was another story. Here, two guards approached the warden for his personal authority to open the gate. Sherry and I are running into the city to buy a gift for her sister's birthday, he said placidly. The guard on the left side of the car dutifully gave the warden a salute and waved him on. The guard on the right gazed at Cromwell, who made a show of looking for something in the purse. The guard dipped his legs to look under her hat, but Weber caught the movement and snapped, "Stop gawking and open the gate!" The guard straightened up and waved to the engineer in the tower who controlled the mechanism that opened the massive steel doors. As soon as they spread wide enough to permit the Ford through, Weber pulled down the throttle lever and raised his foot off the high gear pedal. The automobile jumped forward and was soon chugging down the road toward the landing to board the ferry for San Francisco.